Radio.
Abortion, despair, sacrifice, hope. A talk by Dr. Matthew Tan at DePaul University in Chicago.
Good evening, everybody. It's a real pleasure to be here. So, why does the Catholic choose life? Very often, the Catholic will resort to a very old and standard argument pertaining to the human status of the unborn. The Catholic tradition has provided us with a sheer treasure trove of good reasons to consider the life of the child and the protection of the life of the unborn as something that should not simply be subordinate to the choice of the mother. The Second Vatican Council said in its dogmatic constitution on the Church in the modern world, entitled in Latin Gaudium et Spes, in paragraph 51, this documents the Church's position with regards to the modern world. In paragraph 51, it says, God, the Lord of life, has entrusted to men the noble mission of safeguarding life. Life must be protected with the utmost care from the moment of conception. Abortion and infanticide are abominable crimes, unquote. This line is not merely a 20th century invention. In this paragraph, the Church is merely repeating an injunction against murder mentioned in the Hebrew Bible. Thou shalt not kill. This is mentioned in the book of Deuteronomy chapter 5, verse 17. And this injunction is reinforced further by a statement that God makes to the prophet Jeremiah in chapter 1, verse 5. It goes, before I formed you in the womb, God says, I knew you. And before you were born, I consecrated you. Unquote. In other words, everyone from conception till death in the Catholic tradition is protected by the injunction against the intentional taking of life because each one, from the moment of their conception, is someone made in the image of God. To deny that image and to intentionally take any life from the moment of conception on constitutes more than an act of murder. It is a pretension to know better than God, and to take away the blessing that God had bestowed on that life. In other words, the intentional killing of any person from the moment of conception until death constitutes that moment when man tries to become more divine than God. That idolatrous moment recalled by the serpent in the Garden of Eden that led to the fall of man in the book of Genesis chapter 3, verse 5, the quote that goes, you will be like gods yourselves. Now, my presentation could detail these same reasons, which can be broadly termed the defense of the human status of the unborn, and in so doing, fulfill a stereotype about the Catholic position. But I think the Catholic position can do something more. I think attention to the human status of the unborn, important though it is, insulates us from other contextual questions that the Catholic does, or at least should, take into consideration. What the Catholic standpoint also addresses are the dispositions within the culture that we live in that make the liberalization of abortion understandable and acceptable. In other words, I want to ask the question tonight, what does the normalization of abortion demonstrate about the culture we live in, regardless of that culture's understanding of the status of the unborn? And can the Catholic standpoint do any more? For indeed, there are some who may accept the humanity of the fetus while still regarding abortion as an acceptable choice. And indeed, contrary to some arguments that those who perform or get abortions lack compassion, there are those who actually regard the provision of abortion as part of a regime of care, both for the mother and for the unborn. It would be too easy to simply say this is a distortion of words by the culture. We need to look deeper because I think something has been sucked out of the culture that would make a culture render an inhumane act like abortion humane. This something that has been removed from our culture is the virtue of hope. And I submit tonight that abortion, from the Catholic standpoint, is not just an action. It is an institution that normalizes a culture marked by an absence of hope, a culture marked by the dominance of despair. I will look at this with reference to two contemporary Catholic authors that many may not know, namely the French anthropologist René Girard and the American philosopher and theologian Gil Bailey. To begin, we see in our world many causes for despair. From news of wars and natural disasters in Africa, Asia, and Eastern Europe that flood our TVs, to the wanton acts of violence in our streets and behind closed doors in our neighborhoods. From our almost inescapable immersion in patterns of consumption with supply chains that lead back to battle zones, slave labor, burning factories, and environmental catastrophe. Our economic lives are similarly marked by despair, with numbers of the chronically jobless constantly on the rise. A journalist from the news agency Al Jazeera once described our economic times as one not just of ongoing poverty. This journalist spoke of a post-employment economy, where it is now not just types of jobs that are economically obsolete, but even the very concept of employment itself is becoming economically obsolete. And even those who do have jobs face the onslaught of rising costs of living and resultant wage stress. And all this happens while the chasm widens every year between a small cadre of haves and swarms of have-nots. And our attempts to find ways out of these impasses always do nothing but disappoint, from scientific solutions that create more problems than they solve, or leaders with visions that we bring into office only to find that they prove to be the same or as worse, or worse than before. To paraphrase Hamlet, fortune is truly outrageous. And any glimmer of a brighter future is slowly being shut out by the material conditions of our lives. And to paraphrase the Catholic philosopher and playwright Gabriel Marcel, human resources, vitality, and potential in the face of this despair become more and more diminished, making life look more like a condition of captivity than adventure, more visibly unattractive and more visibly meaningless. What compounds a tragedy and intensifies the sense of despair is that we are made to believe that there is no other world to envision except the world where the weak are trampled upon by those who see the hungry and the naked and piously say, "Go in peace, keep warm and well fed, but do nothing to alleviate their suffering." This is mentioned in the letter of St. James, chapter 2, verse 16. When such a condition of ongoing suffering and ongoing neglect becomes the norm and no other is envisaged, the result can only be, in the words of the Zimbabwean Jesuit Pius Ojara, quote, "The only result can only be becoming self-centered and thus locking myself up in despair." And when a society is locked in despair, it becomes a society that will turn in on itself in order to survive. Now, this is where René Girard becomes relevant. Girard thought that in our day, societies that may appear to live on certain optimistic visions of a bright future, in reality, are built upon a foundation of sacrifice and proactive victimization. In order for societies to continue standing, according to Girard, someone has to stand in as a sacrificial victim that gets killed off so that the rest of us might continue standing. And if one does not volunteer to be that victim will be volunteered by the society. Girard argues that this goes on regardless of the self-proclaimed sophistication and enlightenment of that society. We see examples of the creation of sacrificial victims everywhere. In the migrant with the weird clothing, in the sweatshop worker that keeps our garments cheap, and so on. What complicates this is that sometimes we do not need to have an active hatred for such people. We might even think we are doing such people a favor. One of Girard's disciples, the American Gil Bailey, said that all that is needed, quote, is the conviction that the elimination of the victim is necessary for the preservation of the community as presently constituted, and that the present constitution of the community is worth the sacrificial cost required to preserve it, unquote. In other words, a society without hope will have nothing personal against the victim, only the conviction that someone has to die and it better not be me. And in our day and age, ladies and gentlemen, Bailey explicitly argues that the unborn have now become incorporated into this class of people that need to be sacrificed. He argues that the, quote, the existence of abortion on demand qualifies as the greatest single sacrificial victim, system of all time. Now, Bailey identifies the killing of the unborn as, quote, indispensable to the continuance of the regime of the sexual revolution. However, I think there is something much more fundamental which requires such numbers of sacrificial victims. Sacrifices are what uphold societies in our day and age, and what the sacrifice of the unborn upholds is a society built on the absolute primacy of individual autonomy. So much so that should an individual need any assistance, another individual that seeks to protect his or her autonomy can provide none. And it is this drive to maximize individual benefit and refuse help to the other that has resulted in the catastrophes that I mentioned earlier. And so, a society of autonomous individuals is also a society that refuses to hope that there is anything or anyone on the other side of tomorrow. And that is the underlying cause for a society built on despair. But as long as all I am doing is to identify and analyze the situation that we are in, we will continue to be devoid of hope. As Karl Marx once said, quote, the point is not just to interpret society, the point is to change it, unquote. But how to change a society in which despair is so deeply entrenched? Remember that the catalogue of despair-inducing catastrophes that I mentioned before were the result of long patterns of practice. And I'll conclude by arguing that whilst despair is a set of practices, the church also says, so too is hope built on practices. And what is needed in the defense of the unborn is not merely a repetitive assertion of its humanity, but for those on this side of birth to become glimmers of a world that assures both the unborn as well as the mother and the father that concrete avenues of commitment to them are to be found in a world that deems them only worthy of being used and thrown away. The key to the building of this hope is solidarity. The key to this hope is addressing what Pope Francis, in his apostolic exhortation Evangelii Gaudium, called, quote, the crisis of communal solidarity. For the problem of a society built on autonomy lies not in the lack of resources, but lies in the lack of bonds of solidarity that commit one to keep open the flow of one's resources to others. These bonds of solidarity are not just nice feelings of togetherness. They don't just make you feel warm and fuzzy on the inside. These bonds of solidarity are patterns of action which institutionalize a relationship of ongoing fidelity that goes all the way down to what Jesus in the Gospel of Matthew chapter 25 verse 40 calls the least of my brethren. Even if, and this commitment to ongoing fidelity goes on, even if society were to risk complete and utter collapse, so that the least of these brethren might not become a convenient sacrifice. Such bonds of solidarity can't come through human effort alone. For remember, it was through human effort alone that has given rise to the sacrificial regimes that we now endure. The Catholic will always assert that hope is not a nice feeling sourced from the human heart, but a divine action sourced from the heart of God himself, a God who became human, a God who subjected himself to humankind's regime of sacrificial violence. And in so doing, in the words of René Girard, God opens the way to something other than the inevitability of sacrificial violence. This alternative to ongoing sacrificial violence is the hope that is born in the body of the God-made man, in the body of Christ, given flesh in his church, since it is his church that is Christ's body. This means that the church, founded on a hope for another world where abundance flows even in times of scarcity, should be a vanguard against the cultural monopoly of despair. It is a church that is not confined to mere pious acts, but spills out into an economy of commitment to the alienated, to the marginalized, to the despairing, even at the risk of the church's own survival. This means solidarity with each and every one of us, from the greatest to the least, and it is this solidarity that will in turn underpin the promise of solidarity to what the Psalms call the generation not yet born. It is this solidarity that makes the church that vanguard against despair, that center of hope that says, in the words of Isaiah chapter 43, verse 19, "See, I am doing a new thing. Do you not perceive it already? I am making a way in the wilderness and streams in the wasteland." I thank you for your attention.
That was a talk by Dr. Matthew Tan. For more from Dr. Matthew Tan, and for more talks, interviews, and shows, visit cradio.org.au.